G'day, Paul Barclay with you. Welcome to another week of National Conversations here at Australia Talks on ABC Radio National, Radio Australia and on the web. Even if you're an avowed meat lover, you mightn't know this. Australia's $13 billion meat industry is in trouble, and predictions for the next 12 months or so remain bleak. Earlier this month, you may have heard, 310 workers lost their jobs when the Young Abattoir in southwest New South Wales suddenly closed, devastating the local community. Then a few days later, 230 workers at the Killarney and Pittsworth abattoirs on Queensland's Darling Downs were temporarily stood down. Their company now saying the closure's indefinite. They're not isolated cases either. The meat processing sector's been struggling for the past 18 months. There have been other closures and many more abattoirs scaling back operations. So what's going on? What's in store for the industry, and what kind of impact is it having on rural Australia, especially on towns economically reliant on the local abattoir? You might even live in one of the towns affected, or know someone who does, or maybe you work in the industry and have some thoughts you could share with us. Ring in with your views on 1300 22 55 76. That's 1300 22 55 76. Always a good idea to ring in early, especially if you're calling from the South Australian, from South Australia or the Northern Territory, where it's pretty much essential to try and beat the half-hour time difference. You can, of course, contribute your thoughts via the website at abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks. One listener has already done so, and we'll hear what he's got to say a little later. 1300 22 55 76, though, the number to contribute your thoughts. Your first guest today on Australia Talks is Peter Weeks. He's the Chief Economist for the Meat and Livestock Australia. Hello, Peter.
Good evening, Paul.
Peter, the meat processing industry seems to be in something of a crisis at the moment. What are the key reasons behind the industry's current woes?
Yes, certainly is suffering. And the main reason, the principal reason really, is the sharp rise in the A-dollar. The works that have been suffering the most are those that the export beef and mutton processing works, and certainly they've been the hardest hit. The Australian dollar's risen about 35% on the same time last year, and with most of our industries, particularly the mutton and beef ones, very export reliant. That's hurt them pretty badly.
Mm.
There's also, of course, the global credit crisis and the recession, and that's hit our demand for our beef particularly hard in our big markets of Japan and US. It's also knocked Russia out of the market just for the moment, and it's caused a major decline in co-product values. So, I mean, that's probably the second one. There's a couple of other major factors.
Which we'll talk. We'll talk about the live livestock exporting market as well, which we'll talk about soon. But just on the Australian dollar going up and therefore making our meat exports more expensive to the markets that import them, presumably other markets have come in to fill our share of the market. Is the problem then that those markets that have come along with more competitively priced meat may well permanently take up our share in the export market?
Certainly that's a big risk. It's a big risk, particularly with the US market. The US is a competitor because US has just now, since 2007, been getting back into Japan and Korea, after having been absent due to BSE concerns for some years. And and so they're getting
BSE being the disease that devastated the industry, didn't it?
The mad cow disease, yeah, that America had. And and so they're now got the benefit of a very low US dollar and making them very competitive in those markets. We've got a majority share still, but certainly we're under pressure.
So the industry's been struggling then for, what, around a year or so. What are the projections going forward?
Well, I mean, certainly this year is still going to be a pretty tough year, I think, for the industry overall. The dollar is probably going to stay high for much of this year. Certainly the banks seem to think that we're going to average over the 90-cent mark this year, which is pretty hard for us to operate with. I don't think there's going to be much consumer recovery in Japan or the US this year, and I think they're still going to suffer from some lower stock numbers. And that's the other critical factor in this whole equation, is that numbers are going down for cattle at the moment. They're going down sharply for sheep.
Mm.
And I think that's going to be a feature this year, especially after the recent rain.
Is that because of the drought that the numbers have gone down?
Yes, 10-year drought has really knocked the sheep flock particularly. It's also taken, in recent years, about 1.4 million off the cattle herd. So, yes, that is the principal factor that's dropped the numbers. And now, of course, with rain, there'll be producers keen to rebuild and hold on to some numbers.
Mm. So we've got the global economic conditions, which have been pretty bad over the past year. We've got the high Aussie dollar. We've got drought. But the Meat Workers Union have actually pointed their finger to another problem, I think a problem that they believe may even be the primary problem, and that's competition with the live meat export trade, a sector that's actually flourishing at the same time that the processed sector is struggling. How much of an impact is that having in your view?
Well, I can't say that it's having no impact at all, but certainly the principal factors by far are the ones I've mentioned above. I mean, the high dollar, the global recession, US competition, falling stock numbers are really the four big items that are really impinging on the sector.
Can you quantify, though, how much of an impact the live meat trade is having and whether it's, in fact, taking away markets that were previously stitched up with the processed meat sector?
Well, there's certainly no evidence that it's taking away markets. If you have a look at the growth in Indonesia, for example, which is the market taking almost all of our cattle, certainly over 80% of all the cattle that's going out, and that's been the big growth market.
Mm.
You've seen to Indonesia just in the last 12 months, growth of over 50% in the beef that we've been exporting to that market, at the same time as they've taken additional cattle as well. So it's basically a very strong market in Indonesia. They haven't really suffered the downturn that our other markets have suffered from,
Peter,
or have they suffered the rise in the currency.
Very good to talk to you, Peter. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Peter Weeks is the Chief Economist of Meat and Livestock Australia, giving me much more information about the processed meat industry than I knew beforehand, and hopefully that's the same for you. 1300 22 55 76 if you'd like to lend your thoughts as to what's going wrong, as you've heard some of those local abattoirs in a range of country towns having to close down and that having a big effect. What do you think can be done about it? What do you think is the cause of the problem? Give us a call, 1300 22 55 76. In a moment, I'll bring into the discussion Lee Norris from the Australasian Meat Industry Employees Union. But let's head to Steve in Parks before then. Hi, Steve.
G'day, Mr. Barclay. G'day to all your learned panel and to all your listeners. Look, this is more evidence of an urgent need to bring back protectionism. Why isn't our government protecting our beef industry, our lamb, our pork, our chicken, beef, all agricultural produce? This collapse of business has been going on since 85. It's got to stop. How do we lobby our politicians to bring back protectionism with full tariff and quota protection and stop the bankrupting of the nation through these free trade agreements, Mr. Barclay?
Okay, Steve. Good on you, Steve. In Parks in New South Wales. Let's talk now to Lee Norris from the union, the Australasian Meat Industry Employees Union. Lee, welcome to Australia Talks.
Thanks, Steve.
That was actually Steve we heard from there in Parks.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
That's okay, Lee. Anything actually in what Steve was saying there? I mean, is there an element to the problem that you're facing that has got something to do with free trade?
Oh, most definitely. You're looking at a fundamental choice here. I don't disagree that the Australian dollars had an impact on the processing sector, particularly the export processing sector. I don't disagree that the drought has caused problems as well. But they're things that we have no control over. There's not too many policy levers that you can pull. Now, when it comes to the live export trade, which is in direct competition with the chilled meat trade, export trade, there are things you can do, and it's an immensely political decision whether you want to keep putting a raw commodity on a boat and send it overseas, or whether you want to enhance, not so much protect, because I don't think the processing sector needs protectionism. It's stood on its own 2 feet for over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you want to enhance and indeed preserve the export chilled meat trade.
It would seem, though, Lee, that what Meat and Livestock Australia is saying is that the live export trade has in effect created new markets rather than taking from existing numbers. Are you disputing that?
Well, that may be so, but it doesn't really meet the problem, and that is there's a problem with supply. Now, when we've got contractions in supply and we're sending that commodity overseas, it makes no sense whatsoever. You know, we've got to make that call, whether or not we want to preserve and indeed enhance a local export industry that adds 20% more value to the Australian economy than the live export trade. The chilled meat export industry, of course, too, and this has been touched on in the opening, It supports so many jobs in those regional and rural areas. Now, once you lose those jobs, once you lose the capacity in the industry to meet demand when things do right themselves, it's almost impossible to retrieve it. Now, if you talk to any of the governmental policy people, they'll tell you to generate a new job in regional, rural and indeed remote Australia, you're looking at a cost to government of anywhere between $15,000 and $25,000.
Mm.
Now, do we spend a dollar now? Do we pull a few policy levers now? Or do we let it cost us 20 times more down the track?
But how do you do it when the markets that are importing meat in live form apparently prefer it that way? And if we did offer up refrigerated meat, they may well not decide to take us up on the offer.
No, well, I don't agree with the premise in that proposition. It's a matter of notoriety that some Middle Eastern importers of sheep have taken the step of actually moving away from the live export market for different reasons, and there's been a corresponding upswing in chilled and frozen beef imports. So I think that's a overstated myth, to be more than frank with you. We know also that there's demographic changes occurring in the Middle East. They're moving towards the Western notion of a supermarket. Now, that's a wonderful potential to move the chilled and frozen meat trade more into those areas.
Mm.
And without being repetitive, it's a trade, of course, that adds 20% more value than putting a raw commodity on a boat and sending it overseas.
And you're obviously seeing this sector as a threat to the jobs of your members. Precisely what, though, can the government do about it? How could it intervene? Are you suggesting that the government intervenes to prevent these live meat exports?
No, I don't think you could ever eliminate the live export trade, but we've got to get some balance back into the equation. At the moment, and look, what we want more than anything is a level playing field. Now, we've talked about the beef industry, but the sheep exports live are actually accelerating in the face of this so-called global economic crisis. Now, what we want is a level playing field. We know for a fact that the prices paid by those Middle Eastern countries are heavily affected by subsidies paid by governments. Now, that has the net result of artificially driving up the price for the local processors here in Australia. And you've got that going on in the face of a contraction in supply due to drought. You've got the Australian dollar problem and so on and so forth. So, you know, we really do have to, if we are going to give people a choice, the primary producers, and they ought to have that choice.
Mm-hmm.
If we are going to give those people a choice as to which market they sell in, it's got to be the true market price, not an artificially distorted one by all rich Middle Eastern countries.
Mm. Okay, I'm talking with Lee Norris. He's the industrial officer with the Australasian Meat Industry Employees Union. We're talking about the state of the processed meat industry in Australia, facing some very tough times with a number of abattoirs closing down. Love your thoughts on 1300 22 55 76. Maybe you work in the meat industry or you're a producer. Maybe you live in a community that relies on a meat processor for employment. Love your thoughts. 1300 22 55 76. We'll take a couple of your calls and introduce some new voices into the discussion in just a moment. Let's go to Peter in Brisbane, though, before then. Hi, Peter.
How are you going, Paul?
Very well.
Just with regard to the importation of beef into Australia,
mm-hmm.
it was my understanding that if Australia didn't have some sort of policy in place regarding this, if, God help us, that we actually got a case of BSE in Australia, it would shut down the entire Australian beef industry.
Mm-hmm.
So by having an import protocol to import beef from countries that have been BSE affected, we are in fact protecting our own industry if, and God help us, if we did get a case of BSE in Australia.
Yes. So are you questioning the current biosecurity arrangements, Peter?
No, I'm just saying that's a necessary evil. If we had a case of BSE in Australia, it would completely decimate the Australian beef industry after we eradicate that problem, because we've got no protocol to use beef from anywhere that's had a BSE outbreak.
Okay, no, sounds like a fair point. Perhaps we can get a comment from our guests a little later to that. Thanks, Peter. Let's go to Bob. And Bob, where are you calling from?
From Bulladela.
Bulladela. Tell us your thoughts, Bob.
Well, I many years ago, when Ken Booth was the treasurer of the state, we obtained a government bond to go and borrow the money to fix up the Vega Dairy Company. Now, that was a basket case, completely basket case, and now it's going ahead like live fire, and that's probably over the last 20 years. And I used to be a proud member of the Labor Party. I'm not any longer, but I used to be. So I can join together with these people if they wish and tell them how we can do this.
This was around about the time that the dairy industry was being restructured around Australia, and a way was thought through to assist the Bega Dairy. Is that right?
That's right, yes. And we've done the same with the timber industry in the area I live in.
Maybe there is indeed something to learn from the restructuring of those agricultural sectors. Thanks for your call, Bob. 1300 22 55 76 is the number, or you can email us your thoughts at our website, abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks. You just click on the topic and add your thoughts. Joining you now on Australia Talks is John Berry, the director of Swift Australia, the nation's biggest processor of meat, covering around 20% of the market and operating from Townsville to Tassie. And we also welcome Loch McKinnon, the Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council. John Berry, welcome to Australia Talks.
Yeah, good afternoon.
How tough is it for meat processors at the moment, John?
Very tough. Internationally, we've got a load of animal protein and a currency which is not putting us in a very competitive position.
And why is that? I mean, are you talking there? How much of an impact would you say the high Aussie dollar is having?
Look, it's the fact that we do operate in a highly competitive animal protein business around the world, but the dollar is something we've got to work on. But unfortunately, at the moment, we're seeing both supply and market conditions squeeze margins quite considerably in our business.
So there are exporters just waiting for someone like Australia for the cost of their meat exports to increase so that they can jump in and fill the gap? Is that what you mean when you talk about a competitive market?
I think the point is that we are very proud as a country in terms of our beef and sheep production systems. But unfortunately, you know, the international marketplace is price-driven. We've got cheap animal proteins in the form of pork and chicken from other parts of the world, and really at the moment, based upon the availability of livestock numbers, both in northern and southern Australia, compounded by the global economic crisis, the last 12 months haven't been a pretty sight for the processing sector.
And how has it directly affected your operations, John?
Well, I think from the start that we have processing facilities in Queensland, northern Australia, and they're beef processing plants from Townsville, Rockhampton, through to Dinmore, which is Australia's largest, near Ipswich in Brisbane. But the point is that we've had to scale back our operations in Townsville for 2010. That's resulted in 267 jobs, which are not required this year from 2009. That's about 33% of the workforce that aren't there this year.
How many people is that?
That's, as I said, 267 or 33% of the numbers we had in 2009.
And do you see any light at the end of the tunnel in terms of re-employing those people, given an improvement in the situation?
Not in 2010. Over the last number of years, we've built that business up considerably. We've moved it to a seven-day-a-week operation, and now we're seeing that we're having to, unfortunately, go back to a five-day-a-week operation. And we're also seeing that across our other plants in Queensland. Dinmore, Australia's largest, we've had to move from an 11-shift, seven-day-a-week operation to a nine-shift operation over a five-day-a-week. All indications are that we're going to see a lot less numbers processed here in Queensland this year, and that's got to be of concern.
Trying to get a handle on the actual impact of the live meat export trade. Now, you're the biggest processor of meat in Australia. How much supply are you losing to that expanding live meat export trade?
Well, I think the point is that, from a numbers perspective, we saw just on 948,000 live cattle go out of Northern Australia last calendar year from MLA's figures. And, 80-odd% plus of those numbers go direct to Indonesia. Now, my perspective that, there's a large numbers which certainly at the heavier end, 350 to 400 kg animals could have been processed here in Australia.
Mm. Talking to John Berry on Australia Talks, he's the director of Swift Australia, the biggest processor of meat in Australia. We'll hear from Lock McKinnon in a moment from the Livestock Exporters Council. But just quickly want to go to Murray from the West Pilbara in WA who's called in. Hi, Murray.
Yeah, how you going, Paul?
You're a producer?
That's right.
What's your take on the current problems besetting the industry?
Well, I'd just like to say that I understand that there's a shortfall certainly over east. Over in Western Australia, we're still facing problems with inadequate kill space on the abattoir floors over here. There's just insufficient facilities in WA to support a large or a state-wide domestic market.
So the abattoirs aren't big enough, is what you're saying?
Well, there's not enough of them. There's no real abattoir or decent-sized abattoir north of Gingin, which is only just outside of Perth.
Mm.
For us up here, it's a 1,300 kilometre trip down to the nearest abattoir, and it's only 600 k's to the port for live export.
Yeah, it is an interesting paradox. We've got abattoirs closing because there's not enough work for them. In other states, you're saying in WA, there's not enough abattoirs around. But haven't they been closed down, though, abattoirs around Western Australia because of the growth in the live meat export trade, Murray?
It has been a part, but the biggest problem with other abattoirs in the state has been getting continuity of supply due to wet season interruptions, and also the labour. Mm. That's certainly why a number of abattoirs, particularly up north, like the Wyndham Abattoir, were shut down.
And so how would you describe the state of the processed meat sector in WA then, Murray? I mean, you seem to be reasonably upbeat given that you're suggesting that you could actually handle more processing if the abattoir space was there.
Well, I certainly believe that to be the case. That said, we turn off most of our stock through live export. Mm. Because that's the market that we're breeding according to. We're supplying predominantly to Indonesia.
Yep.
I'm sort of just wondering a bit whether or not it's that live export's more picking up on a shortfall. If the market's not there for the boxed and the chilled product, and the stock have got to be moved somewhere somehow, people have still got to make a living.
Mm.
If live export's providing that opportunity, then that's a pretty warranted reason for people to turn to it, in my opinion.
Yeah, reasonable point. John Berry, have you got a response to that from that point from Murray in the West Pilbara?
Oh, I think there's parts of Australia, as Murray's saying, where they haven't got direct access to meat processing facilities, and the live production system is the option. I suppose what I'm saying from a Queensland perspective is that, there are heavier animals going out of this country live, and that certainly has changed over time. Historically, lighter animals have been going over to these countries, either direct to the markets or into feedlots. And clearly, we have a very high cost to operate here with all of our labour and export requirements. I just don't think it's a level playing field in terms of competition for live slaughterweight cattle.
Mm. You're on Australia Talks on ABC Radio National with me, Paul Buckley. Let me introduce you now to Locke McKinnon, the Chief Executive of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council. Hello, Locke.
Good evening, Paul. How are you this evening?
Very well. Locke, is the live export trade sourcing stock from producers who would normally supply the processed meat market? There does seem to be some dispute about this.
No, I'd have to disagree with those comments. I believe that the majority of livestock that are going on boats aren't at those processing weights. So if you take the cattle trade out of northern Australia, the majority of cattle, and I'm talking the higher majority of cattle here, are leaving at sort of 300 to 350 kilos. As Mr. Berry said before, they're looking for cattle at 350 to 400. So I'd probably have to disagree with those comments, to be perfectly honest with you, Paul.
It's difficult, though, because on the one hand, we're hearing that lack of supply is one of the factors affecting the meat processing sector at the moment, yet the live export market doesn't appear to be suffering any supply problems. In fact, it seems to be growing. How do you explain that apparent contradiction?
Well, I'd have to say that the livestock that Australian producers and Australian farmers are producing, especially in northern Australia, is exactly the type of animal that is wanted in the markets that we sell to. So I suppose as these type of animals are bred and produced, the live export industry is there to pick up those livestock that have been bred specifically for live export.
And what How are they characterised, that form of livestock?
As I said, that lighter type animal, the more Brahman type animal, which is that sort of the Bos Indicus breed of cattle, the ones with the humps. For those that don't know, those type of animals are the cattle that the industry that I work for is looking for and do so well in our overseas markets.
And how much of the live export market is beef compared with sheep?
Well, just to throw a few figures at you there, Paul.
Mm.
Basically, last year we exported, as Mr. Berry said, about 948,000 head of cattle and about 3.5 million head of sheep. I'd just like to refute one comment, though, that was made earlier by the union representative, was that actually sheep exports are actually declining in Australia. We did 4 million the year before last and only 3.5 million last year.
Is that because of the drought and the lack of supply of sheep around the country?
Lack of supply, they're not there.
Mm. Yeah. Lee Norris, would you like to respond?
Well, all the research material that I've read said that there is a global acceleration in demand for sheep and sheep meat products.
Mm.
Now, that's attributable to national herd shrinking all over the world.
Mm.
So I don't accept the point that's been advanced at all.
John Berry, the point being made by Locke McKinnon there is that part of the reason that the live export market is doing so well is that they're providing those markets with the type of meat that they want. I'm wondering if, by implication, there's the suggestion that your processed part of the market isn't, and that is there any market for the processed version of the type of stock that we've heard is being exported in live form, such as the Brahman stock?
Well, I'd like to say that, you know, we have seen growth in the box beef business into Indonesia as a country. There is a market for it, but, you know, to pick up on Mr. McKinnon's comments, if you look at the marketing or the information that's being put out there by the live export industry, quite clearly they're targeting animals over 350, 400, even up to 650 kgs live. And in the case of bull, that are going direct out of Townsville and other key locations. If you look at the boats that are coming into Townsville, the numbers that are being taken out by one boat is the equivalent to 3 to 4 weeks processing numbers for our plant in Townsville, for argument's sake. So I think the point here is that we seem, as a country, to be looking at opportunities. That's all great. But, you know, our view is that we've got to make sure we don't export cattle live today, which won't be there for processing in the future.
Mm. I'm struggling, though, to understand how you address the fact that there are markets that are growing that seem to be demanding their beef, especially in live export form. I mean, what can anybody do about that?
Well, the point I would raise is that we as exporters in this country have to meet importing country requirements, whether that's the US, Japan, etc. And we have a lot of cost associated with ensuring that we meet those standards. We have full-time aquas people on plant,
mm-hmm.
and that's a very costly part of the business as well. But at the end of the day, if there are regulations in place for industries, all we want is to make sure that those regulations are met and managed and monitored by the regulating authorities.
Yeah, I think the suggestion very much of an unlevel playing field. You're on Australia Talks. We'll hear more from Lee Norris from the Union and John Berry from Swift Australia. And I thank Locke McKinnon for his time. Locke, the Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council. Love your thoughts on 1300 22 55 76. Do you live in a community in which the abattoir is an important part of the local economy? Perhaps your community has just recently lost an abattoir or is suffering from a scaling back of operations. Why don't you give us a call and tell us about the impact it's having on your town? Or maybe you're a producer with some thoughts about the industry's problem and the live export trade and the role that it's playing in the problems with the industry at the moment. Give us a call on 1300 22 55 76.
ABC Open is an exciting new project which will give regional communities more ways to share their ideas and stories with the ABC.
And right now, we're looking for talented, passionate digital media producers, people who have great ideas and would love to share their skills.
There are 30 amazing creative jobs up for grabs.
So if you're passionate about telling stories,
check out the ABC Open website
and be part of the future of Australian media.
abc.net.au/open.
You're on Australia Talks on ABC Radio National. We're talking about the troubles being experienced by the meat processing industry in Australia and abattoirs being closed around Australia. Let's head to some calls. Ron Cullen has called in from the Sheep Meat Council of Australia. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Paul.
Ron, I think you wanted to talk about the figures for sheep exports.
Yes, I just wanted to correct some comments made earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Sheep live exports are dropping this year, and that's pretty much also as a result of supply issues. Clearly, 10 years of drought have been one of the most significant factors in terms of our ability to supply all of our markets. Sheep meat industry's looking one of the favourable sort of things on the agricultural scene at the moment. And we're encouraging producers to look at their supply, their numbers of sheep that they've got, because the opportunity's there for them to make some decent returns, which many of them haven't seen for some time. And the live export's one of the important underpinners of profitability for sheep meat producers right now.
Mm.
And we believe that they're complementary, the box market and the live trade. If you look at what's happening in the Middle East particularly, which is our major destination for live sheep, where live numbers are falling, box meat figures are going up. And that's because we've got a good reputation in the market. We put good quality product in there. We've developed a reputation through the live trade, and that's now helping us to increase the box trade. So I'd maintain they're complementary.
You don't see them as being in competition with one another?
Well, certainly there's a supply issue, but given that we're putting out, you know, just over 3 million, and Locke McKinnon may have provided the actual figures, putting about 3.5 million sheep into that market, that's a fairly small percentage of our offtake from sheep meat production. There's about 33 million sheep slaughtered each year in Australia.
And do you think that we will see around the country, and I understand that drought conditions are easing in different parts of the country, but will we see farmers reinvesting in greater sheep stock numbers around the country?
We would certainly encourage them that way, but that's going to be a decision for each individual producer to make. Certainly our forecasts are for the national flock decline to cease and to turn around and head in the other direction.
Okay, good. Thanks for your call, Ron Cullen from the Sheep Meat Council of Australia. Let's head to Dubbo and speak with Roger next. Hello, Roger.
Hello, how are you?
Very well.
Yeah, Ron Cullen answered some of those questions. We're large processors in the Middle East, and there's been a major change there over the last few years where we're now mainly into...
Roger, when you say we, you're talking on behalf of one of the abattoirs in Dubbo, are you?
No, we're also in a plant in Western Australia, but I'm speaking on behalf of the processing industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is that we can serve five-star hotels, we're serving the supermarkets, we're serving the work camps, and where the live sheep trade was very big was the major where weathers were going out to the trade, and that the weather trade's gone because wool prices went down.
Mm.
And there's a change there. And last year, we actually put more meat into the Middle East than we'd done previously, and the live trade went down. So, you know, even though with a strong Australian dollar, we competed with that, and also the car industry with a $6.2 billion stimulus, their sales dropped nearly in half, according to the newspapers. Now, we've done a lot of work on improving those markets over the years, and the chilled product that we're going by sea is a big thing. But our problem is keeping, we have a plant in Western Australia, is competing with the mines, with labour, keeping stock numbers right. Ships can come and go. Abattoirs cost a lot of money to maintain and to operate, and it's a difficult one. But the other major issue, and, you know, being a large sheep processor, we do watch the figure. I'm a large farmer.
Mm-hmm.
The wool industry, and also I'm vice president of the AWI.
Mm-hmm.
So the wool industry is now picking up, and we're seeing people going back into sheep. And I see the figures of about 34 million, which we processed live and slaughtered last year, has to come back to about 25 million, otherwise we'll kill the sheep flock out.
Yep, I'll leave it there, Roger. Thanks very much for your thoughts, Roger in Dubbo. I want to come back to Lee Norris from the Union. Lee, I think as we've heard today on the discussion, we've got drought, we've got a high Aussie dollar, and we've got the live meat trade all acting together in some sort of perfect storm. And we've seen the high-profile closure of the Young Abattoir in New South Wales. It's really, though, that closure, it would appear, the tip of a big iceberg, isn't it?
Yes, well, see, the closure issue and the loss of capacity out of the processing industry isn't something that's happened overnight. We've seen a steady trend over the last 30 years. Now, to pick up on something that the caller Murray called in with, there was quite a good capacity in Western Australia. It's been reduced and some places eliminated. Now we've got primary producers phoning in and saying, well, I've got to send them live because there is no abattoir.
Mm.
Now, it won't be before too long. Some primary producer in Young will phone up and say, well, I've got to put them on a boat because we've lost the abattoir here in Young.
And lost the skills that go with the abattoir as well.
Precisely, and the you know, momentous sort of contribution to the local economy it makes. It all serves to demonstrate what a destructive and awful prophecy that the live export trade is.
It removes
the capacity and then relies on the lack of capacity to turn around and justify the trade.
So you really can't see the two sectors working together in complementary form?
That was arrant nonsense, to be frank. I mean, both of those sectors compete for the same commodity. They all compete, and it's a hostile competition. They all compete for stock, right? So to try and make out that they're complementary, particularly in this time of exacerbated supply issues, is frankly arrant nonsense.
So the problem,
and whilst we might say that 3 million or 3.5 million, and that doesn't tally with the figures I've seen, but let's work on it for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
3.5 million out of the 33 million that were available for slaughter is some type of small figure. Well, that could represent, as we've seen across Australia, we've seen 1,500 workers subject to stand downs up to 1 or 2 days every week. That's what 3 million represents to those workers. That's what 3.5 million sheep represents to the Australian economy.
Mm.
So to try and minimise it as the attempt was done really is...
I'll go to John Berry from Swift Australia, big meat processor, biggest one in Australia. John, I mean, we're talking about obviously a troubled time for the industry, but what are the long-term prospects for the meat processing sector, do you think? Do you remain confident of its long-term prospects?
I just pick up on what a number of the speakers have been raising as well. The fact is that these plants are very expensive to keep going in terms of capital, recurrent labour cost, inspection cost, etc. You can't just have these plants run down and expect them to be there when we need them. So in Northern Australia, Townsville being the last of the export plants in Northern Australia, you lose a plant like that, well, the next opportunity producers have got to move their cattle to central Queensland or southeast Queensland. So the options are being cut. So at the end of the day, we need balance. We need people to understand that there are issues out there, and, you know, to pick up on it again, that there's cattle being sent today that could be processed here in Australia going forward, which won't be, and there's blue-collar jobs and investments which are at stake.
OK, you're with Australia Talks on ABC Radio National. We're talking about the troubles with the meat processing industry in Australia and jobs being lost in country towns as a result. Your last chance to call if you'd like to contribute your thoughts, 1300 22 55 76. That number again, 1300 22 55 76, or the website abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks if you'd like to post a comment. Now, just days after the closure of the Young Abattoir, the company operating abattoirs in Pittsworth and Killarney in the Darling Downs region of southern Queensland stood down over 200 workers in a temporary shutdown. Ominously, on Friday, the company said the abattoirs would remain shut indefinitely. Ron Bellingham is the mayor of the Southern Downs Regional Council. Hello, Ron.
Oh, hello, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, look, thanks for joining us, Ron. Obviously, a big blow to the local communities. What happens while these abattoirs remain in limbo?
Oh, at this stage, the meat workers associated with those have got to look for other jobs. Some of them will move on to other communities and other areas where they may get employment. There are other abattoirs in this area, but they have a limited capacity as to their ability to take on some of these workers.
So what sort of impact does it have on the towns and more broadly on the region? I mean, we're talking about 200-300 jobs. Doesn't sound a lot, but I would imagine there are flow-through effects on all of these towns.
Well, it does, because it's the major industry in the community of Killarney. I think it's a problem from the community's point of view, because it becomes reliant on that one industry to support so many of the families. I mean, father, mother and son, in one case I know, that are working there. So that makes them, as a family, redundant. They need to seek jobs elsewhere.
Do they face the prospect, Ron, of having to leave the region to find work?
Oh, absolutely. We've had similar close downs, not quite to the extent of this, and the community has absorbed many of those people, but these are specialist people working in the meat industry, and they will, some of them will get jobs locally, but some of them will simply have to move on if they are looking for, in a job of the same nature as what they've been doing.
So the very survival of these communities may be at risk.
Well, Killarney itself is a very diverse community, and I think that we've seen fairly hard times before, and the community will come out of it. I have no fear of that. But the hurt that it imposes on families and the difficulties that it imposes on individuals really is, well, it's catastrophic in the short term. And in the longer term, hopefully, the community will become stronger because of it.
Ron, I mean, I don't know whether you have a sense of this directly. Do people, like the workers who are affected by this, do they sit back, maybe get some jobs if they can to tide them over and hope that the industry reopens down the track, or do they just give the game away and look for a new avenue of work?
Many of them do both. If they can get it in the industry, look, they will take
whatever they can
work
get, yes,
that is available. Mm. And we've had fairly severe drought through this area for a long period of time. We've got it getting a little bit of rain now, and hopefully that will generate a little bit of economic activity that could produce other jobs within the area.
Yes.
But I, just the same, I feel for the families. Some of them have invested in homes in the community of Killarney and other small communities around Killarney. They've invested in homes and are paying them off. Mm. And that puts them in a really bad position because, as one of them said through the local media, that the possibility of him selling his home and being able to move on, it was probably pretty remote in the market that has been created by this closure.
Yes. Look, I'll leave it there. Good to talk to you, Ron, and not a great story to tell, but let's have our fingers crossed that things improve. Ron Bellingham, the Mayor of the Southern Downs Regional Council. Lee Norris, if I can come to you just briefly. Those with a sense of history about the meat processing sector will know that in years gone by, it's been at the centre of some controversial industrial relations manoeuvres. I just wonder, is it conceivable that workers in this industry could come under pressure to accept some inferior work and pay conditions in return for an abattoir reopening down the track? Is that a realistic scenario that some of your members may face?
Well, we'd have to look at the circumstances as each case as and when it arises. But can I just say this? You've heard Mr. Berry from Swifts talk about seven-day operations. This was a thing that was arrived at through industrial arrangements that the union agreed to.
Mm.
The Australian meat processing sector has undertaken really sweeping reform in terms of industrial relations over the last, I'd say, about decade to 15 years. A lot of the so-called inefficiencies and problems with the IR setup, identified by the Productivity Commission in 1998, have essentially been swept away through enterprise bargaining.
Mm, okay. Look, Can I just finish briefly?
We did face a situation where the Lakes Creek abattoir was effectively closed from 02 till about late in 04. Now, we had to arrive at arrangements that ensured the company could get it up and running again, but very quickly thereafter restored entitlements and levels of basic remuneration.
Okay, look, I will leave it there. I'll get a quick response from you, John Berry. We just heard from Ron Bellingham the effect that layoffs have on local communities. Obviously, you're a company with an eye on the bottom line, as is necessarily the case, but how much do processors like yourself, who've had to lay off several hundred workers, take into account the impact of job cuts on these local communities?
That's quite significant. Quite significant, and I think in the case of a large regional town such as Townsville, this year we will not be seeing the $14 million in salaries and related which those 267 jobs would generate. And if you look at it in just pure economic terms, a 5x multiplier, which is a significant figure, $70 million which won't be generated in that economy this year, I think it's hard for businesses to plan to move forward and to expend money in their assets. And clearly, if we're seeing an impact on a significant regional and rural town like Townsville, well, it has horrendous implications to smaller regional and rural towns.
It does. Thanks to John Berry from Swift Australia. Thanks also to Lee from the union, Lee Norris. Let's very quickly go to Peter in Westbury. You'll have to be brief, Peter.
Yep, okay. Look, I'm a chef. I'm in the kitchen at the moment, so I've got to be brief. one of the problems that we have is that we can't get the produce that we want. We can buy the fillets, we can buy the sirloin, we can buy all of the prime cuts, but if you want sweetbreads or brains or heart or anything like that, you can't get it because it goes to the digesters for making it into blood and bone. So the only brains and sweetbreads that I've been able to get recently have been from New Zealand.
Well, that's a very interesting perspective, actually, the perspective of the person that cooks the meat and who can't get what he needs. Unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there. I do suggest, though, that you go to the website. An interesting posting already on that website from our contributor, Meat Eater, who brings into the discussion the contribution of climate change to this debate and the suggestion that we eat too much meat. That's contributing to climate change. We need to address it, and that may well compound the problem that the processed meat sector is facing. You're with me, Paul Barclay. That's it for another Australia Talks. Tomorrow, we're taking a look at the number of school students working part-time. It's increased significantly. What effect does it have on their studies? Is it good for them? Love your thoughts on Australia Talks. Stick around for Late Night Live with Philip Adams after 10, talking to war correspondent, broadcaster, historian Michael Goldfarb. That's after 10 with Philip Adams. I'll speak to you tomorrow.
Hello, I'm Beth Yap, inviting you to join me for Elsewhere, a program for travellers. Take a journey through the ABC's vast archives for stories and sounds from around the world.
I can see the silhouette of individual trees against the grey sky.
This week, the South Island of New Zealand, where memory, dreams, music, and the natural world are woven together in lush abundance.
Through the top of the windscreen, a harrier hawk circling. A pair of native pigeons appears to dive at the car.
South Island by Chris Abrams and Sherry DeLeese on Elsewhere. You can download or stream this program from the Radio National website.